Vice President J.D. Vance scolds European governments about democracy, stealing the spotlight from Ukraine-Russia peace talks.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
The U.S. tells NATO to increase spending and take on more of its own defense.
The president has said 2% is not enough, and we're going to argue that up to 5% is the necessary investment.
Analysis on the new administration's changes to U.S. foreign policy strategy.
But you're seeing at the beginning of what I would call not the United States as European power, but the United States simply as another power in Europe.
Join us now on the Voice of America's Issues in the News.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
Europe faces many challenges, but the crisis this continent faces right now, the crisis I believe we all face together, is one of our own making.
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, addressing European leaders at a security conference in Munich on Friday, saying it appears that they are drifting from true democracy.
If you're running in fear of your own voters, there is nothing America can do for you. Nor, for that matter, is there anything that you can do for the American people who elected me and elected President Trump. You need democratic mandates to accomplish anything of value in the coming years. Have we learned nothing that thin mandates produce unstable results? But there is so much of value that can be accomplished with the kind of democratic mandate that I think will come from being more responsive to the voices of your citizens.
Vance telling the conference that he believes some European nations appeared to be acting like the nations that were defeated during the Cold War.
And unfortunately, when I look at Europe today, it's sometimes not so clear what happened to some of the Cold War's winners. I look to Brussels, where EU commissars warn citizens that they intend to shut down social media during times of civil unrest the moment they spot what they've judged to be, quote, hateful content. Or to this very country, where police have carried out raids against citizens suspected of posting anti-feminist comments online as part of, quote, combating misogyny on the internet, a day of action. I look to Sweden, where 2 weeks ago the government convicted a Christian activist for participating in Quran burnings that resulted in his friend's murder. And as the judge in his case chillingly noted, Sweden's laws to supposedly protect free expression do not, in fact, grant, and I'm quoting, a free pass to do or say anything without risking offending the group that holds that belief.
Many European leaders expressed dismay with the vice president's comments, including German defense minister Boris Pistorius, who said Vance's comments were unacceptable. He said he strongly disagrees that minority voices were being silenced. Here he is from a Sky News social media post on X.
But democracy does not mean that a vociferous minority will automatically be right and they cannot decide what truth is. It does not mean that anyone can say anything, and democracy must be able to defend itself against extremists that try to destroy it. I am happy to live in Europe where this democracy is defended every day against its internal and external enemies. And therefore, I would like to explicitly contradict and oppose the impression that Vice President Vance suggested here that our democracies oppress and silence minorities. We not only know against whom we defend our countries, but also what we defend it for. It's for democracy, for freedom of opinion, for the rule of law, and the dignity of each and every one, ladies and gentlemen.
The German president made even stronger comments saying, quote, what is certain is that the new American administration has a different world view to ours, one that has no regard for established rules, established partnerships and trust, end quote.
Let's get some analysis on the conference developments. Joining us now is Daniel S. Hamilton, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate it. Let's just start with your overall thoughts on Vice President Vance's speech.
Well, I think he missed an opportunity to speak to the Europeans concerned about European security. It's the Munich Security Conference. His point, though, was to say, as he did, that he thought the main security threat to Europe was, as he said, from within, not from without. And he pointed to episodes to bolster his case that there's a retreat in Europe, he said, from free expression, free speech, that some political parties that are seen on the periphery are, you know, blocked from full participation in the political process. He referred to the election in Romania, where a presidential candidate came out of nowhere, heavily influenced by social media, financed by Russia, to win a round in the presidential election, and a court in Romania decided to cancel the whole process and have new elections. He cited that as, you know, a suppression of free information.
It seems to me like there's a changing dynamic here, like we're sort of distancing ourselves from Europe and offering a branch to Russia and changing the dynamic of a very long relationship.
I think you're right. My quick way of saying it is that for 80 years, the United States was a European power, meaning we were integrally involved with all of the elements that brought the continent security, prosperity, defended against the Soviet Union. You know, our troops anchored European defense, our companies were heavily engaged, our politicians and diplomats were part of all the intricate compromises, you know, and coalitions the Europeans themselves constructed. We were a source of reassurance for the Europeans, not only about the Soviet Union or Russia, but about each other. You know, it was the Europeans who got us into two world wars when they couldn't get along. I think a secondary thing, which people don't say in polite company, we reassured the Europeans about Germany, and we reassured the Germans about themselves after two World Wars, and then, of course, German unification, which many were concerned about. But the U.S. said, you know, these are all good things. We'll stick by you. And I believe starting not with the Trump administration, but before that, frankly, there was a sort of a sense in the United States that those kinds of instinctual interests in Europe, that Europe was the center of global order, that an unstable Europe, you know, had ripple effects all around the world, that Europe was not only important, but it was urgent, seemed to fade away. And now what you're seeing at the beginning of what I would call not the United States as European power, but the United States simply as another power in Europe. And the U.S. as a power in Europe, not a European power, will operate according to a different playbook. It's not necessarily involved in, you know, all the compromises and coalitions the Europeans want to create. It could be as much a source of anxiety for Europe as a source of reassurance. It can play spoiler, not just stakeholder, when it sees it an advantage to do so. It can play the Europeans off against each other, rather than to work with the European Union, because it's so easy to do sometimes. And that's a very different United States than the one that the Europeans and generations of Americans have become accustomed to.
There are people that believe that the world is changing. Europe is, for lack of a better word, withering its economy. You know, three decades ago, the European Union's GDP was about 70% of the United States. Today, it's about 50%. There's a concept that the world is becoming more transactional, less dependent on these kind of alliances, something that Trump senses. And do you think he's gambling on the future lies with Russia and China and not Europe so much?
This is my personal view. I think the president believes we are in a Hobbesian, world of states competing for power, and that the only sort of peer, countries with whom he should cut deals, the other great powers, are Russia and China. And that's why he acts differently with them than he does with almost anyone else. I would argue that Europe is just as robust as it has always been. Its share of GDP is smaller because the world itself has grown bigger. It's really the U.S. that's outdistanced everybody, if you look at any of the statistics.
Well, there was one point at which Vice President Vance actually said to the conference, if you can't do this, it was in the part he was talking about, they're suppressing the extreme left and extreme right parties. And he said, we were elected, and if you can't listen to all of your voters, there's nothing we can do for you, and there's nothing you can do for us. Kind of like the reverse Kennedy line, right?
Right. These are rhetorical flourishes. I don't know quite what that would mean. He said at the same time at the beginning of his speech that we remain committed to Europe. We remain committed to our alliance. And the president has said that, too, after the defense secretary put that in question. So it is. There are a lot of mixed messages going on. Let's say that charitably.
Sounds like European leaders are concerned that the Trump administration is sort of trying to change the narrative and the legitimacy of the Russian president.
Well, I think he did that this week. He said that Putin had a legitimate reason for invading Ukraine. He has said in the past he didn't think, people in Crimea are basically Russian anyway, even though they're not. So, he's done that. He said Russia should come into the G8 again, even though Putin is an indicted war criminal. And if he sets foot out of Russia, most countries are obliged to arrest him. So, he did give huge legitimacy to Vladimir Putin.
Is it a wise strategy, though, to bring Russia back into the conversation and try to end this war and other issues with Russia?
Well, no one should ever not want to discuss things with the Russians, but if you're going to negotiate, you don't give away all your leverage, as Secretary Hegseth did earlier in the week by saying Ukraine is never going to join NATO, you can't count on us, we're not going to be there, you have to do all this yourself. Those are half the negotiating points that you'd have in a negotiation. They threw them out the window. They were walked back by the president. Senator Risch, Republican, head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said that was a rookie mistake, he called it. He said he sort of dumped on the defense secretary like he doesn't know what he's doing. That was a Republican. So I think it's early days for this administration. You can see they're not all on message. And at a time of war and a time of great anxiety in Europe, all of that came out this week. So I think that's what we're dealing with is, what's the real story here? And I don't think the administration has really got it together yet.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and explain all of this. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
That was Daniel S. Hamilton, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute of Johns Hopkins University. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Lori London.
And we say this in solidarity, is you have to spend more on your defense, for your country, on that continent, understanding that the American military and the American people stand beside you as we have in NATO.
Tough love to NATO from U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth on Thursday.
We are very much committed to the NATO alliance and to our allies, but without burden sharing, without creating the right set of incentives for European countries to invest, then we would be forced to attempt to be everywhere for everybody all the time, which in a world of fiscal restraints is, again, to get back to that word reality, just not reality.
Hegseth said European countries need to start spending 5% of their GDP on defense, up from the current 2% mandate. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said he agreed that NATO must do more.
We have to ramp up defense spending because we know we cannot protect ourselves 4 or 5 years from now if we don't. And also we need to ramp up defense spending because it is clear that the US rightly requires us to do more here on the European side and the Canadian side of NATO. It's only fair, it's only sensible.
And British Defense Secretary John Healey also agreed.
We heard his call for European nations to step up. We are and we will.
Let's get some help understanding these new U.S. policies and relations with the alliance. Joining us now is Jennifer Cavanaugh, Director of Military Analysis at Defense Priorities.
So thank you so much for being able to join us and talk about this.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk big picture. What are the takeaway, the big takeaways from Secretary Hegseth's first visit to NATO?
Well, I think he made three main points. The first two are about Ukraine, and the third one was a broader point about the U.S. role in NATO. So on Ukraine, I think he said two important things. The first was that the United States does not see a return to Ukraine's pre-2014 borders as an achievable objective of the current war, which I think is really just an admission of the reality and something that President Zelensky has himself said. Second, he said that Ukraine's NATO membership would also likely not be part of a war settlement. He's since walked that back a little bit to say that everything is still on the table. So there's a little bit of ambiguity there. But I think that also is really an admission of reality. There are a number of NATO members who have pushed back hard on bringing Ukraine into NATO right now. Maybe down the line is something to consider. And then the third broader point about the U.S. role in NATO was really to make it clear to the Europeans that the United States, which has really underwritten and carried the majority of the burden of Europe's security since the formation of NATO after World War II, that it could no longer carry that burden on its own, and that Europe would really have to step up and take the lead on its defense, that the United States still supports NATO and wants to be a part of the alliance, but that it could no longer be the leader and the major funder of the alliance's activities.
It's interesting because there were concerns previously that the U.S. under a new Trump administration might pull out of NATO, but apparently that is not what it sounds like now at all.
At least not at this moment. I think the hope of many in the Trump administration is that by being very clear about the European responsibility, that will force or encourage Europe to actually step up, and that the United States will be able to remain in NATO without carrying so much of the burden, and that would forestall any sort of larger divorce. I think whether or not that works is an open question. President Trump is certainly not the first president to come into office hoping to shift burdens onto the Europeans. The problem is that while that talk sounds great, when Europe doesn't step up and there's a crisis, the U.S. rushes in to save the day. And so there hasn't really been a credible signal that the U.S. is serious about asking Europe to step up more. Now, Hegseth's language yesterday was very different and much more brusque and straightforward than past secretaries of defense have been. So maybe that prompts a change. But it could require more significant moves, such as changes in U.S. force posture in Europe, to get to force that change. So I think the long-term question about the U.S. role in NATO is still a little bit of an open question, but certainly right now the administration is signaling we're not anti-European, we're not anti-NATO, but we need Europe to step up. We're disappointed in the progress we've seen so far.
Hegseth gave them a target of 5% of GNP to turn towards military spending. And Secretary General Root, in his news conference on Thursday, said we have to spend more, we have to step up, and it seemed to be an echo of what Hegseth was saying.
I think that's true. I think Europe does recognize that they need to spend more. But I think the challenge remains finding the money to do so. I think 5% is an unrealistic goal for most of the countries in Europe, at least in the near and medium term. Some of the Baltic states, as well as Poland, are already pushing towards that goal. But the countries that really matter with the big GDPs, like Germany and France, are still a long way. And they have struggled to even get to the 2% mark. So I'm a little bit pessimistic that they're going to be at 5% anytime in the near term. I think the actual focus on the spending target is a little bit of an unhelpful distraction. I think that the message that the United States is sort of trying to send here, and that Hegseth alluded to a little bit, is that like Europe needs to step up and take responsibility for its defense on its own, not spend more underneath U.S. leadership. And there's a subtle difference there that I think should be teased out, and that focusing on the 5% is a little bit doesn't actually get at the root of the problem, which is that Europe hasn't taken responsibility for its own defense for decades now.
One of the things he talked about was the ability of not only Europe, but the United States as well, of being able to even manufacture arms. And he said, you know, the Ukraine situation just showed how vulnerable both Europe and the United States was when it came to cranking out shells. And even beyond that, he said, when allies order like jet fighters, the delivery date is 7 years out, and that needs to be like 3 years out.
Well, the Ukraine war, I think, definitely called attention to some of the shortcomings in our defense industrial base, both the United States and the broader NATO alliance. I don't think they were unknown to people who were following it closely, but they definitely pulled out a lot of the challenges and the bottlenecks, made those much more visible. It also underscored the fact that like modern war is very costly and requires a lot of stuff. It not only requires advanced fighter jets, but also just millions of rounds of ammunition. And there has to be a balance between the mass and the high-tech stuff. And our defense industrial base just isn't set up for fighting a war in that way because we haven't had to do it in so long. And so I think Hegseth is right, that we do need to have investment in defense industrial base. It should be smart investment, so that we're investing in the types of capabilities that we actually think we're going to need to fight a war. And a balance, again, between the mass and the high tech. But Europe is even in a worse situation because they tend to get most of their defense equipment from the United States. And so that's another thing that I think has to change, is that Europe really needs to build up its own industrial base so that it can manufacture and be a little bit more self-sufficient in the defense space. Now, it's a little bit controversial in some parts of the United States, especially in Congress and among defense contractors, because that would mean less business for U.S. firms. But if the goal here is to get Europe to be able to do more on its own without relying on the U.S. for everything, then that's also a necessary step, is that Europe develops a more robust, capable, and independent defense industrial base.
So what about expansion of NATO in general? Is that at all beneficial to the U.S. or is it detrimental?
I mean, that's a controversial question. My view is that continued expansion of NATO is a bad idea for the United States for a couple of reasons. The first is that continued expansion of NATO only expands the U.S. security burdens. Even if Europe steps up, if NATO gets bigger and that Article 5 guarantee extends to more countries, that's more risk the U.S. would get pulled into a war. There would be a lot of political pressure to send U.S. forces where a NATO ally attacked.
That was Jennifer Kavanaugh, Director of Military Analysis at Defense Priorities.
This has been VOA's Issues in the News.
For more news throughout the week, listen to our daily podcast, The Issue, available at voanews.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
and I'm Lori London.